Well, with that, it's 5:30. Good evening, Mayor and Council. For our December 12th briefing, we have a handful of topics to go over with you tonight. The first one's a little bit more of a clearinghouse item. 4 years ago, when I started, one of the first things that we did was had a discussion with Council about lines of communication to make sure we were all on the same page. Did the same thing 2 years ago when a couple of council seats switched, and then would like to do the same thing again today. Also coupled with that would be a discussion on your protocols for going forward with regards for meetings and briefings. So most of what you see in the attachment that was sent to you is with regards to communication. A lot of people take a very strict interpretation of city charters with regards to anything administrative has to go through the city manager. As I've discussed with y'all in the past, I have no problem with the elected officials reaching out and having conversations with the department directors to ask them questions. I ask that you keep me on a CC list, and don't worry about it, because if you don't, the department directors are pretty darn good at keeping me in the loop when they've had contact with each of you, whether it's by phone call or even wanting to stop by and discuss in person. If there are any questions on the communication, please let me know now. But the other big one there is with regards to when I'm off the clock versus on the clock. When I'm here in the office, obviously I'm in the office. If I'm out of the office but still performing work for the city of Jacks Beach, then that means I'm reachable, even if I'm in Orlando at a conference or somewhere else. The big thing is when I'm off on vacation, there's a reason this organization has a deputy city manager. And it's because Karen has the full authority to make all decisions in my place when I'm not here. So 99% of the time, if I'm not here and I'm out on vacation, sick, or bereavement, whatever the case might be, Karen has been left with the full authority to make any and all decisions associated with the organization. Are there any questions with regards to communication? And if not, we can jump into a conversation about council meetings and council briefings, to see if you all want to keep things the way we've been doing them for the past few years. I tried to provide this council with a little bit of history. When I first got here, the meetings were starting at 7 p.m. If there was a briefing that was needed, it was starting at 6 o'clock before it on the same night. Over time, that has evolved as the council has wanted to spend more time talking about policy issues affecting the organization and the community. So right now, the way we have it set up is we have our council meetings on the first and third Mondays of the month, starting at 6 p.m., and we have our council briefing right now once per month, starting at 5:30 on the off Monday, with the fourth Monday being held in reserve if there's ever anything special that we need to get together to discuss. So this is kind of like the convening of Congress, where this is the group that will be working together for the next 2 years. If there's anything that you want to propose doing differently, now would be the time to have that conversation and see if there's anything you want to change.
This is me hitting my switch.
I just want to say something for the record, and I think I know the direction it's been going. I really enjoyed the Zoom briefings. I thought they were effective. I thought it was convenient. I also think, as it stands today, we're generationally speaking, that we're at a point in time in life where we could probably support that moving forward versus what we're doing right now. I think it's more convenient for our citizens and our community that they can log on to YouTube and actually watch a briefing. And that would be the only change I would recommend, although I understand the thought of not everyone has a computer, but my gosh. Where we're at in society today, I would think that most people have some kind of communication device of sorts, whether it's a cell phone or a computer or what have you. That's my only proposal.
You want to speak to the legalities on that? Or?
Not really.
Is anybody?
I will.
If there's a question.
So I will take that as a question. So thank you, Councilor Jansen. We went back to in-person meeting in part because the authority that was in place for the technology meetings was actually expired. So it was put into place by the governor to deal with the COVID-related pandemic. And once it expired, that authority for having meetings by Zoom was considered expired. And so we continue to have those Zoom meetings well past the expiration date. When I was out of the office back in May, it was brought to my attention do you realize that there's still, you're still having these meetings and the authority has elapsed? So that brought the attention back to, on what basis can we justify continuing having those meetings by Zoom? And there really isn't any right now.
And it didn't define the difference between a council meeting and a council briefing?
Well, so this is the segue. So recently we got into, had to address the issue for the purposes of the interviews. And there is
board interviews.
Right.
And there is some language about work sessions having a little bit more flexibility than, say, a meeting per se. And so if we maybe renamed what this gathering is and made clear to the world that no business would be transacted by it, perhaps we can go back to those Zoom meetings. I haven't looked at the issue outside of that one brief instance on the interviews, but I can certainly look at it. And we can talk I can talk with the city manager to see, is there a way to inform, label this as something else that we can at least have a prima facie covering by statute. Right now, I don't think I can do it based on the information that I have right now.
When you say it was brought to your attention, how was it brought to your attention?
I had substitute counsel who brought it to my attention.
Interesting.
Yes, sir.
Are there other communities doing it, still doing Zoom meetings for
briefings?
Smaller meetings?
I haven't checked. I can do that and report that back to you as well, sir. One of the reasons why the question that was really sort of rhetorically asked, why it resonated, is because that was a question briefly when I first got here, but I figured since there was already this practice in place, it had been clear through council at that time. So, you know, maybe it's just a matter of everybody moving at lightning speed with the charter review, that this wasn't brought up for discussion prior to that time, but it was brought to my attention, and that's why we sort of acted in kind after that.
So we can be thankful that we got through the charter review.
Still yes. Yes. So I will put that at the top of my list of things to do. When I can,
sure.
To see if we can get back to that and call it maybe a work, because these really are sort of work sessions, so mm-hmm. I don't think there needs to be a whole lot of analysis, but just the comfort level in extending that, the case law to cover us on this.
And I just think this creates more inconvenience than it does convenience. And not that I'm trying to sideskirt, you know, face-to-face with the community, because by all means, come to every meeting, you know.
Right.
And it was really helpful, too, when we had, you know, a Cliff Shepherd or whoever was coming to speak or present something to us, that they could just hop on a Zoom.
Sure.
Sure.
And we're all seeing the same thing. And yeah. Even when with the applicant interviews, we were...
Right.
We had to call them a workshop. Right.
Right. That's what we...
So that we didn't have to have a quorum for them. So we...
Yeah. And, in, you know, there's always that provision that since you can... sort of do some remote participation, that, you know, on a rotation basis, some people dial in by Zoom and other people appear in person, and then on the next outing for a work session briefing, another group of members participate from Zoom, by Zoom, and the other group.
Well, I don't necessarily support a hybrid, because I think that's, my experience has been that's a challenge. Either the people who are on Zoom or the people who are in person, somebody gets short shrift. So I think it's either all or nothing.
Yes, ma'am.
And I also think if we all or nothing in terms of the attendees, and I wouldn't even support alternating, because as it is, the first couple weeks that we left Zoom and went back in person, we forgot to take Zoom off of every, you know, so people were confused about.
I agree. I think it should be all or nothing. And I also think that in of itself, the word briefing kind of conveys that message, or session, I think,
right.
Kind of steps aside from the word meeting, you know, but.
You know, technically though, whenever, you know, two or more of you get together, it's presumed to be a meeting. So, I mean, there's this legal requirement that's gonna always be in the back of the mind of the attorney, so you can call it whatever you want, but legally it is a public meeting when two or more of you
sure.
meet.
What kind of exposure do you think there is if we do it, somebody, the op, or concerned, someone's going to sue us?
Well, the the sunshine law, and if I'm thinking on the right provisions there, if it's an intentional violation, you're subject to criminal penalties. So, I mean, it has an effect of putting you all individually in some form of jeopardy, even if, you know, the city can't be sued for monetary recovery, you could find yourself easily sort of defending your, against the, you know, class five misdemeanor or something. I'm just pulling class five out of the air, but I believe
but
there's
an interpretation of a statute that we interpret it one way that other people don't.
Right.
So there's gray area.
Your protection will come from the advice of counsel and your, you know, the local government attorney. So if you can say, we based this, our decision to do Zoom meetings on the analysis of our city attorney, that operates as a defense under the statute.
Okay, thank you.
I do like the time being at 6 o'clock for council meetings. 7 seems way too late.
Yes.
Granted, I did that for however many years, it's late, so 6 is much better. So I suggest we stick with that, and 5:30 for the briefing mm-hmm. seems to work as well.
I agree.
Okay. Is that it?
You might as well stay here because the next.
Well, we also had, I can't remember who it was, a citizen approached the dais after one of our meetings and said that at some point we were live streaming the briefings in this room, not the Zoom briefings, but previously. And Sherry confirmed that we have the technology to do that, but we're not currently doing it. Is there any reason why we wouldn't go back to doing that?
We can go back to do it if that's the preference of council. That we're not legally required to do it, but we can do it.
Sherry's pointing.
Sherry
wants.
Sure.
Sherry, you want
to? Because there's another meeting, we can only use either this one camera for this room or the one camera in that room for live streaming.
Okay.
So we choose to do the one that has public comment and input to live stream.
And that's when we have them going back to back, correct?
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's an overlap, this meeting would end up getting cut short.
Okay.
Because that one is going to take precedent, whatever occurs in the other room.
Further supports the Zoom meeting.
But that's a great segue for the policy manual, if you're ready.
Yeah. Are there any other questions on item one on the briefing? If not, I'm going to turn over item B to Sandy.
All right, good evening, members of council. I have before each of you a hard copy of what I will call as the original text for the legislative policy manual, and then a working draft, which is a set of revisions that I'm proposing. For the new members, I just want to give you a little bit of history on how we got here. On March 4, 2019, the City Council authorized the creation of the legislative policy manual. In October of 2020, the council reviewed the draft that was provided at that time and requested that a final version be brought back to council for final review and approval before adoption. In March of this year, when it was our intent to amend the policy manual, we learned that it had never been adopted. So subsequent to that discovery, I was asked to make some revisions based on just my review, what I thought would be best to include for the purposes that were intended. So what you have as a working draft represents that undertaking. I would say that the working draft that's before you still has a lot more revisions to undergo. It will require further compartmentalization by either utilization of divisions or chapters. But in terms of the content, I've started moving this toward the place I thought, or I think the legislative policy manual can best serve this council. But one of the things that we addressed back in the spring was this: there has to be a real clear message as to what is intended to be served by this document. As it's presently drafted, a lot of the subject matters are covered under the guise of the legislative policy manual. There doesn't seem to be a clear purpose, and it's so diluted in its purpose, I think the efficiency and the effectiveness of it is also compromised. But what I've tried to do with the working draft is to sort of direct this along the lines of what seems to make more sense in terms of having a well-run meeting. how should our processes be applied regardless of what the matters are that are presented. And to that end, some of the new texts offered, I've tried to, as much as possible, preserve some of the original text. If you're looking at the working draft, everything in red is basically new proposed language. The black language represents that which was already in place. If you also look at the original text, as I said, there's a wide range of subject matters that are addressed. And really, for me, the document becomes most effective at section 4-4, when we start to address filling a vacancy on council. And again, primarily because it really deals with procedure and how procedure will be applied by this body, but primarily through the framework of procedure, which I think should be the overriding consideration. In terms of reviewing what has been presented as a working copy, we can do this thematically or page by page, or you can just give me general directions and say you reviewed it and keep going until you have more work done. And with that, I'm happy to accept your comments and answer questions.
I read the red line. I can agree with pretty much the majority of it. I'm glad we're using the word term mayor and not head.
Yeah, there is one. I found one.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. Was it original text?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Well, I tried to preserve the original text as much as possible. But why don't we just go through page by page then, and you guys let me know if you think I'm on the right path.
Mm-hmm. Well, can I bring up something, though, really quick, though? Because I seem to recall, and Chris, maybe you can help out with this, too, but I think that we kind of got started in this direction because when Mike came on board, I think you had said that you had a legislative policy manual where you were, and then apparently there were resolutions that we were not aware of that maybe had been passed, you know, and so this was an opportunity to put things in one place so that we as a body would know here are the things that we need to be aware of that. Yeah, and so anybody who knew council members or whatever would always have access to this information, because as it was, we had resolutions that were sitting there that nobody knew about, right?
So, and I think this was addressed when we last had this topic before the council briefing, but the question I presented was, you know, is there any narrowing of the topics covered by those numbers of resolutions? Because, I mean, if it's just collect every single resolution that we've adopted over a two-year period of time, all you have is a collection of resolutions, to be honest. It's really, it doesn't serve any function other than to have them all just bound together. It doesn't tell us how this document is supposed to work. I mean, we call it a policy manual. So some of the resolutions approve contracts. So where do we distinguish what types of resolutions that we include? I'm just looking for direction when it gets to what are we trying to accomplish. But I do feel like if there's too broad of an approach, it's going to not be utilized as often. I mean, we might have our favorite provisions to pull out, but it's really going to be primarily for the benefit of this body and maybe someone who has to do business with this body that thing exists. Otherwise, it's, like I said, it's just, you want it to have some functionality, and there is function here, what was intended, but I do think it's been somewhat diluted because of the number of things that are addressed by some of the language.
I think the previous one was a random assortment of resolutions, where this one does seem to be more of a procedure manual than a policy manual. So I prefer the second one because that actually is kind of a how to mm-hmm. be a city council member guidebook. So I think this is more in the right direction of what I think would be useful.
So should we just go through page by page now? Mm-hmm. So on page one, I have what is a working table of contents as page one and half of page two. I've tried to keep everything pertaining to meetings together, as you can see by the categories. And I started it out with, you know, the different types of meetings. I can source some of the original language if you need that, but on page 2, which is the regular meeting section, 2 additional provisions were included. And that's really just, you know, you've got the power. It's like, put something in writing so you can flex it, is pretty much where I'm going with a lot of the extra language. And so you can add additional meetings to your schedule. You can, if you roll over to the next page, you can eliminate a meeting that is on your schedule. We have some broad language as to when that can be that can occur by the body. Some authority is vested in the mayor to be able to pull that decision under certain conditions. And there are a number of them set forth. So there's a convenience provision, there's a, if there's some public safety consideration, all of those things are provided for, which again, just gives you more options than we don't now have. And then the last provision at 115, line 115, the mayor and the city manager may change the time of any regular meeting. That's already in our city code. So when we first started talking about this, a lot of the provisions in the city code we wanted to have basically incorporated in your legislative policy manual so we can get rid of them under the code. But this is a provision that is already provided in the code. So even though we've discussed this afternoon starting briefings at 6 or meetings at 6 and briefings at 5:30, really at some point in the future, irrespective of a decision later on to adopt a time, mayor and the city manager can change that time based on this authority under the city code.
And Ms. Robinson, we don't want to get into the minutia of, like, look on line 73 where it says the meeting should be held on the following, I guess, day. That's not a holiday weekend. At, are we going to put the times in? Are we just going to remove that altogether?
Yes, the proposal is to remove the time.
All right, then we've removed the word at on there as well.
Yes.
That one's not struck through.
And there's a few things throughout this that I was reading that were like that, but I don't want to get into minutia of that.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, I thought I'd gotten it and I didn't get it and I didn't pick it up on a review. Special meetings, you know, it's kind of normal language that would exist for somebody that had the authority to call special meetings. I would really love if we didn't address this in the city charter, because the city charter requires 48 hours notice, and under state law, it's just how much notice is reasonably necessary under the time, which, again, provides you the flexibility. Now, here, we might get to that same place because there's a provision where members can waive that 48 hours notice by agreeing to come at an earlier time. But it's just one more procedural hoop that we have to jump through. Keeping in the lines of the meetings, the different types of meetings, I have a provision on public hearings. I've kind of set forth a process here, in large part that was driven by communications with Mr. Popoli in the planning department, and a practice that has existed in one of my former localities. There's been allotted time for public hearings, one to the applicant, one to the city, and it has to be the same amount of time. But you know, at least you put forward what the limitations are, so you're not, you know, with an applicant who's an hour later finishing up their presentation. So I think it would be something worth considering putting a limit.
So that's number line 145 that you're looking at?
Yes, sir. So I left that blank.
Yeah, 145 and 165.
And it really sort of, a lot of it tracks what we're currently doing in terms of our practices, but that would be something I would recommend. Same with the quasi-judicial proceedings. We have some more language that incorporates a lot of the expectations or the requirements that are imposed by the state statute. And then it says, basically, in all other respects, we're going to follow our public hearing processes. So again, you get to a place where you can start limiting people in their presentation. The briefings and work sessions.
Going back really quick on line 147, it says shall take place after the public meeting has been closed, but should not say hearing.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. That, sorry.
And I have not been limiting the applicant's time.
Yeah, it hasn't happened at all since I've been here, but that's just one of those things. Like, we were going to present that as a potential change to the bylaws at the BOA level and the Planning Commission level.
Okay.
That we just start capping this. And it's unlikely that the city will either utilize their time or utilize most of their time, but the key would be whatever we provide one, we provide the other.
Okay.
And did we resolve the issue with the lengthy email, like when we started reading?
Or that was a one-time glitch.
Yeah. I think the challenge there was that we had placed in an advertisement that if the person didn't appear, we would read what their comment was.
Okay.
So that
okay.
was constraining our choices a little bit. But by statute, if it's in writing, you can just present the writing to the clerk, and that's sufficient for documenting the content.
I think limiting the applicant is problematic. I mean, that's the basis for which, you know, that decision's being made.
Yes.
Now, comment, I agree, whatever, 3 minutes or whatever the case, but if you're talking about limiting the applicant, whether it's the city or...
Yes, sir. And, in my previous jurisdiction, we had 20 minutes each. So that's more than enough time. But there was a limit that you can't take the entire night or an hour
right.
or 2 hours to make a presentation. So your application is going to do some of your heavy lifting. But it does focus a little, it focuses you in what you're going to emphasize during the public hearing. But I think you can, whatever concerns you have, maybe about first, I don't know if they're First Amendment concerns or giving them sufficient time, but again, 20 minutes has seemed in the past to be a reasonable.
I mean, if you can't
threshold.
Get your point across in 15 to 20 minutes after having done all your due diligence in the beginning, I would think that there's an issue.
And they can still answer questions.
Correct.
Yes.
And yeah, if you
rebuttal.
Yeah, exactly.
But
you get to one point, you reach your limit, you get another question.
You would reserve your, it's part of your 20 minutes for rebuttal. So like if you had, 20 minutes, I'll do 15 minutes and I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal or something to that effect. And I believe there is a provision that at least at line 151 under public hearings, the mayor has the authority to extend the amount of time extended to an applicant. So there's, we don't have that for staff recognizing that an applicant might need a little bit more time, but it would be a real time decision as to whether or not we give them more than 20 minutes or whatever the number is.
Yeah, I don't think you have put a limit on any of the applicants, right?
I have not. But they've also been very brief because normally it's not our first time hearing.
Yeah. But the beauty of the rule is that everybody knows coming in what
it is. But does it backfire and everyone feels like they need to fill up 20 minutes when they've been taking 5 minutes? It's always that risk.
Yeah. Okay, so if we keep going on to page 5, we address the briefings. Again, a lot of it's tracking what the practice is, and I'll defer to the city manager if he wants to add something in here. But the provisions that I think probably I wanted to address were lines 210 and 213, and they make more sense in the context of the manager's comments earlier in this meeting, which is, you know, there is that place in the council meetings where sometimes there's that direct communications to staff. And I wanted to make sure that we removed any kind of, any kind of signals that the council was acting inappropriately by talking or giving directions to staff. And that's the purpose of that language. And again, trying to save it so we didn't get dismissive to the requirements of the charter and the city code at 215 through 218, I go back to reiterate that there's still those legal limitations as to how far you can go with making those kind of directions or suggestions to staff. On page 6, the language that's at the top is already in our sitting code in some form. Then we get into the conduct of meetings. This is how we work. Some of that language is new. And I'm trying to bundle as many things that we had sporadically throughout the original text all here, so at least people know how should the meetings work. We address televising the council meetings. At the line 250, 251, I tried to address what was addressed a few minutes ago. When the technology isn't available for live streaming, we can resort on audio. Since I drafted sent the drafts out, I would probably further revise that language so that it's not just limited to briefings or work session. It would be applied to any meetings. In any event, when online streaming is not available, we can record it by audio, and it would be permissible.
Would it be reasonable to put in a little blurb here in regards to the necessity of going back to electronic meetings, like previously during COVID, if we had to do that? Just say, you know, if necessary, we can return to fully remote meetings. You know, I just don't know if that's necessary in here.
I think it might be a great thing to consider adding if we get to that place where the research now says we can probably go back to Zoom for work sessions.
I'm specifically talking like general. If another COVID breaks out next week, and we're just throwing that in there as a little blurb.
Yeah, but
just a thought.
What directed by
the governor?
Yes, the governor.
Yeah, just something in there like, yeah, you know, and we reserve the right to change this as directed by under, you know, emergency mandate, et cetera.
Okay.
I was just thinking that.
Okay.
It's because we literally just got done talking about it. That's why it popped up.
I'll bring back some draft language for us to further review.
Do we need that, though? Because
I wouldn't do it because the governor would supersede that, but it does if somebody wants to say, oh, you didn't follow your... It's like we do have this
point.
Sort of waiver, potential waiver or exception in here in the event of an emergency. But the key with that is it's predicated on some event that takes us to that place, as opposed to us just simply having a policy where we can, if we wanted to, go back and utilize Zoom for work sessions or briefings or whatever the case may be.
So I went back and I looked because, you know, John McGowan sent us a document with some of his questions and concerns, and he had mentioned on this particular section where we say that our meetings will be streamed and will be viewable online. His concern was that what happens if the technology goes out, and is the will too restrictive, and should we word it so that there's a little more flexibility?
Well, that's what I was saying. Based on this sort of post distribution, we can change it so any meeting can be recorded and presented by audio if streaming is not available. As I said before, I tried to preserve as much as the former as possible, and I remember when we first came back to in-person briefings in this meeting, there was that question about, are we going to be able to have this streamed online? And the answer at the time was no. It was just going to be made available via audio. So that was there as well. But I'll go whichever way, but this is what was there, and I just kept it.
Couldn't you just add to the red version that you added in, just say meetings, briefings, and work sessions may be?
Yes.
You already kind of covered it there. You just excluded meetings.
Yeah. We're going to just take all that.
Yeah, 251, line 251 covers it.
Covers it, yeah. Just doesn't say meetings.
Yeah, correct.
Okay, at page 7, a lot of the language that's in red is basically moving things around from different parts of from different authorities into this section.
Line 268.
And 9.
They're twice. Oh, yeah. I just stopped at the first one.
Right.
Dang it.
Doing his.
Alrighty, and so the mayor is empowered to declare a state of emergency. What I wanted to make sure is that the language that was in here tracked the language that's in the between the charter and the state statute. So it's all here. I will, again, this is post-distribution, I'll further clarify that the extension of the 72 hours has to be by a supermajority vote of council, not simply a majority of council.
What line was that?
That will be at line 278. So before city council, it would be supermajority vote. Or five members, if you want me to just say five members of council. At least five.
I like supermajority better.
Okay.
Power.
Down in the section dealing with the vice mayor, I just wanted to start bringing in some provisions where you would have a reason to start thinking about drafting policies or procedures for filling vacancies. There is a Florida statute provision that really requires localities to have an ordinance that addresses the procedures for filling vacancies by death and all of those other reasons. We don't have that. Even if we started to lay out the provisions here in the policy manual, those procedures would not be truly legally effective until we have the ordinance in place. But I just, again, it was sort of something to trigger us to start looking down that path.
It's 190, there's another is.
Yes, 290,
mm-hmm.
Yep.
290.
Okay.
I have two questions.
Yes, sir.
Nothing. Nobody ever thought there would be a woman mayor, like contemplated.
Well, I don't know, Mr. Madden.
that was a standard for that just covered everything.
It's not everywhere.
Yeah. that was you were taught that just means everybody.
Yeah.
We could actually have some language that affect if you want. So if a he happens to slip through the cracks. Everyone might know that it applies to both genders, or we could do he or she or him or her or
find a replace.
I was gonna say you can find a replace. There's gotta be a way in there.
Well, but if you go do he, then I got thee, them,
right.
Theater.
Yeah.
Okay, so
yes,
you had a question.
The appointment, and I know I emailed you on this when we were appointing a new council member. Was there a reason why we didn't have an election and you said that it wasn't on our charter or something?
No, I don't remember that exchange, but I think I addressed this with the group shortly after Councilor Stokes announced his resignation. If we don't have any specific processes in place, it defaults to the state statute. And their way of the language in terms of determining the next regular election is based on the qualification period. And the dates that were in place at the time was the vacancy would occur after are whatever it was needed to be in place to put yourself on the ballot. So if I had that email, I could read it for you because it kind of tracks it very, very closely. And the problem that existed for us, I think, as the subject matter is that we were trying to equate getting notice of the vacancy as the vacancy, and that's just not how the statute read. So you had to wait until the vacancy occur to start calculating the next regular election. So it kicked us to just the appointment being filled by council.
Okay.
I just had one question about vice mayor. Should we use the term vice mayor or mayor pro tem interchangeably? Is that correct, or should we stick with one or the other? Is there a major difference?
Vice chairman in there as well.
Mayor pro tem is the actually term in the charter. I can strike through vice mayor.
I don't carry the.
Some of this was just.
Just pick one.
You know, you pulled out what was already there, and you're just trying to figure out, okay, how can we make it a little bit better or tighter or something, but.
Yeah. I mean, is there any legal difference between the two, from your perspective?
No, not really. Because I think that's how they would treat you.
Yes. Vice mayor means as opposed to mayor pro tem.
Well, vice mayor is probably more commonly utilized.
Yeah.
But mayor pro tem's in our charter.
Right. Yes, mayor pro tem is the terminology in
our
charter.
So then you should stick with that.
But all of the responsibilities appear to be exactly the same.
I think we're perfect at being consistent and
consistently inconsistent.
But you know what you can say without changing the language of the charter, and just say in your policy manual, just say our mayor pro tem may also utilize the term, you know, vice mayor or mayor, if that's what you know, and that that covers us a little bit. You know, if there's no offense to the charter, I don't think there will. Substantively, the duties would fall in line with what's normally done.
My other one was on the conduct of business, meeting decorum. Will this apply to the boards?
Well, there is a provision where we get to boards and commissions where their rights to adopt their own procedures and bylaws is recognized. But in the event they do not adopt their own policies or their bylaws, it automatically defaults to this policy manual. So only in those instances. So. But there is a provision when we get to it at that time also saying, you know, they really can't have a policy or bylaw that's in conflict with either city ordinance or state law. So there are, you know, ways to kind of keep things in check. Conduct of meeting decorum, I think some of this is very self-evident.
Is it duplicative, though, because we reference Robert's Rules of Order in Section F again?
Yeah. So
in almost the same way?
So we're saying our meetings follow Robert's unless the process is, you know, by law we are required to do to something else.
Uh-huh.
And then if there are rules of, if there's a question of procedure, so that's
gotcha.
The distinction.
Okay.
And to some extent, some of this is our practice, but like at lines 312 through 315, it just kind of makes the specifics a little more sharp so that maybe it will prevent anyone deviating from the limitations. Also with the removal, that language has support in other parts of our city code, but it just, again, it puts it in this area about the decorum in our meetings and just emphasizes the power of the chair for all practical purposes. We go into the section on quorum, how it's constituted, and then, you know, just in case you get some individual who's complaining that somebody stepped off the dais to go to the bathroom or something, I wanted to just address if somebody just goes temporarily and we lose our quorum, that you know, technically it's not lost for purposes of going through.
Unless you went home to go to the bathroom.
Exactly. And then I incorporated our remote participation policy. I didn't go and adopt all of it, but I've referenced it so someone can go to that policy. Same thing with legislative actions. It's just to kind of give a nod to those outsiders who want to know how things can get done here. I believe this is a section in section D, which deals with voting. When you talk about D1 at the votes, it kind of will go back in part to C3, but I'm going to propose some additional language that basically says that an affirmative vote requires the majority of members elected, so that we know it's not simply the majority of the quorum, it's the number of members that have been elected to the body. I addressed tie votes based on our hearing a couple weeks ago. I just kind of fleshed out reconsideration of votes a little bit more. the order of business, which was really sort of the catalyst for our first set of discussions on this. So we're addressing this in part because a lot of our code, our order of business is prescribed by the code. So our ability to move things around if circumstances sort of dictate the efficiency of that, I think it's kind of hampered a little bit. So we would like to really move everything that deals with the order of business from the code to the policy manual. And some of the things that we have here include some agenda items that we don't presently have, such as approval of the agenda and a consent agenda. And with courtesy of the floor, which is on number 11, you know, you put in some rules there. Primarily, you can't use it to promote a private business, to do any politicking, to engage in personal attacks. Just some general language that gives you some room to exercise the authority to remove someone if they're breaking our rules or policies. And I reiterate it, the mayor shall be authorized to cause the removal of any speaker who violates the limitations around courtesy of the floor. Describe the purpose of the consent agenda and make clear that a member who really wants to have some discussions, to ask questions, you still have a right to always pull something off the consent agenda and we go through the longer process.
Going back to 458, is the courtesy of the floor limited to 30 minutes already by charter?
Yeah, no, it isn't. So along with limiting the applicant, you just, so it, the only thing that's, we have limitations for is the time, the amount of time an individual speaker has to speak. But in other localities, capping this public comment period is acceptable. And so one of my former localities had 30 minutes max. And when you run out of 30 minutes, you run out of 30 minutes unless everybody decides, okay, let's extend it or whatever else. But if there's something of importance on the agenda, they have that item, that item's public hearing or comment period to utilize. But just if you're just coming up to shoot the breeze and you want an audience.
But we've had meetings where there was not an item on the agenda and there were like 50 people there.
And that drove a decision as well. But that would have also,
I mean, you want to make sure that people that are not there on that topic have an opportunity to speak and you don't want them to be.
That would be an ideal place for council to say, based on this short agenda or whatever else, let's extend the time, or does anybody want to extend the time? But, you know, remember your rules are going to be applied whether there's 50 people that show up or two people show up. It's 30 minutes. So if you're hearing the same message, I'm not saying someone doesn't have a right to come and sort of make their position known to their elected representative, but what I am saying is, it doesn't mean necessarily that as long as there's a person standing, you're going to have an audience. And, you know, just think about it in the context of where the courtesy of the floor is. Now, see, that was, again, one of those issues that came up when you saw 60 people standing in the room. Can we move it to the end of the agenda so we can get all the city business out of the place first so then we can listen without having to keep staff here? There was, I can't even remember, I think at one time I said no, not without there being this suspension of the rule or something to that effect, and I don't think we did it. We just decided we were going to plow through it in its normal place. But there might be times when you want to have the sort of safety of that, and you are the ones that pull that, you know, safety.
I guess I'm just questioning that 30 minutes because that you're basically saying 10 people.
So not a lot of people.
I don't know that that's the number that should be settled on or not. I mean, I'm open to discussion for it, but.
Well, if we have a stack of cards, then we can vote and extend it. I mean, there's no reason we can't do that, or separate them and have. You know, if they're all there talking about one subject, we can segregate that and then have the random speakers speak separately, or, you know. We have the ability to make that call in this.
Well, it's just something to think about in the short
term. And with it being courtesy of the floor, it's not geared towards any particular item on the agenda. So it would be pretty evident to the mayor if she's got 15 cards for courtesy of the floor versus five, then the question could be asked if there's a desire to extend the time.
And if it's an issue that in the future is going to come before us, I'll have other courtesy of the floor to be able to speak to that.
Correct.
And the statute only requires that we present them an opportunity to speak on an issue sometimes before you take action. It doesn't have to occur in the same meeting. They just have to have an opportunity.
Is it, I read it in here somewhere, it doesn't have to be 3 minutes either, does it?
No, I said up to. I took out no more and replaced it to up to.
So we could say 30 people have 1 minute.
That's right. And as long as everyone, the language is, as long as everyone is similarly treated, you can, you know, change the time for speaking.
So if you have a room full of people that are wanting to speak on a specific topic, would the mayor be able to say, okay, you know, we've had X number of people speak on this, are there people here who want to have courtesy of the floor for an item other than this? Or is there, you know, does somebody have to bring something additional to the table other than hasn't been addressed on this issue? Or do you just have to just, whoever gets up and speaks?
Yeah, it's going to have to apply to everyone in that comment period. So it doesn't matter what their topic of discussion is. You're just going to say, listen, we've got so many people here. You can know why they're there, but because we've got 90 people, we're going to limit everyone to a minute and a half. And, you know, good luck to you.
You do not know how to figure out a minute and a half on that clock. So it's going to have to be round numbers.
So let's go to page 12. That's more on consent agenda. And then with the rules of procedures, I think where I envision a lot more work and tweaking is going to be in this particular section. Hopefully to incorporate some things that we see but have not fully been addressed either by the new proposed language or the existing language. For boards and commissions, which start at page 14, fleshing out council's appointment and removal authority. It's not really set forth in any degree of clarity, but it's just kind of bring home, unless the state statute requires a board member to be treated or to be afforded certain rights before they're removed, you guys can remove anybody you appoint at any time. And then in particular, at lines 585 through 589, let me see here, the person who may be subject to removal for cause is going to be given an opportunity in general. If you want to say something, you have a right to say something to council relative to your removal before it's actually effectuated. It's not required, but at least you just kind of bake in this due process. But then I added some language that if, you know, whatever council does relative to exercising their authority under the removal provision doesn't expose this council or the city to any kind of legal challenge. And addressing Councilor Mesa's concern about the bylaws, the policy manual applying to the boards and commissions, page lines 591 through 595 attempts to address that concern. And then after that, it was just a matter of just kind of moving things over from the original text to this format, but I really didn't have a chance to start tweaking it. I started a little bit with the city council and the city manager's provisions, but I didn't get a lot of time for that. So that concludes my efforts today. Tell me if you want me to stay in this same way or whatever.
I think it's much, much improved over the last version that we saw, so thank you for that. And I did write formatting hot mess here, so thank you for clarifying that. And I like that we pulled out, and I don't know if you're planning on putting it back in, but I think we talked about last time, I don't support putting back in those other documents that we would have to go, if we change one thing in the code of ethics, we have to change it here too. Right. But it would be nice to have a link, like a hyperlink within this document to the org chart, the meeting schedule, the board list, and the code of ethics so that you can immediately get to it straight from this document as, you know, maybe they're appendices, but it's a link versus including the entire document. I know that's way down the road, but I just didn't want to forget to say that.
Thank you. Thanks for repeating it because I forgot.
Never hurts.
Anything else?
That's it. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Sandy. I'll ask Jason to come on up next. Next two items are going to be his. And just to confirm with the clerk's office, we're going to be up against a 7 o'clock time limit. Right? Okay. So Jason's got two items, the first one being urban trails prioritization, which you received a bunch of documents associated with it. And Jason, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mike. Good evening, Mayor and Council. I did bring some handouts of the attachments if anybody would like for that. So this project, it's a lot larger than we originally envisioned, certainly what we have provided in our current capital improvements plan. In fact, it's almost 10 times the size.
Awesome.
And so we're here tonight to ask Council essentially three questions, beginning with how long do you see this project, how much time would you see that we would have to complete this project? And in that discussion, do we take on long-term or short-term debt, or do we pay as we go?
I've always been with short, meaning not taking in any debt.
Second.
And going as we go. I know we've set that before, and I know Mike said we'll discuss that in future dates. I still stand by it. I think we should.
I kind of see this as a forever project. I think this is something that we should just always be, I mean, I know we have certain things mapped out, but to me this is something that we do from here on after in our community is think like this. So I don't necessarily see this. I'd love to see us start to get some segments done so we can start showing the community what this is going to look like and getting some wins. But to me it's not like better be done, you know, before my next election or anything like that. I don't have like a timeline on it like that. I don't know about anybody else.
Yeah, I think, in my opinion, I think the parks take a precedence, like Gonzales takes precedence over the urban trails, and that connectivity is important to me. But I agree with the mayor. I think this is a long-term project, and I support it as a long-term project. One of my concerns, and we could either brought it up right now or into the next agenda item, basically the same as Gonzales Park, is are we going to, and I don't know that there's going to be any kind of, for lack of a better, construction difference between what we're putting in Gonzales Park versus what the urban trail, when it connects to it, is going to be done. So in other words, are we going to build Gonzales Park up and then have to tear it right back down again for the urban trail, or could we design that in such a manner that when that connectivity happens, it's already in place?
Good question, Mr. Jansen. So what we are looking at is current projects that would coincide with this. And over the next 3 years, I think, as you know, the Penman Road project's one of those. I think Jack's Drive also comes into that window. But certainly, yes, we will coincide the projects so that we don't go back and undo work that
we
paid for. Yes.
Right. As far as for segments, for the downtown area, I figure common sense that segment will be started after all the construction projects are pretty much done. I think it'll be easier than having to, let's say that's the first thing we do, and then we have two major projects coming up, and then the street's just not going to be feasible. So if we were to do a segment, I think we should wait on this area.
And that's when you take a look at the first page of Jason's memo under the construction prioritization of loops, the first street corridor, or trails to the beach. We can certainly take them all piecemeal and kind of do them as we go, a pay-go type methodology. And as we have different projects come up from Public Works or Beaches Energy, or the CRA, we can piggyback off of those projects. But the other thing we'd be looking at for is those opportunities where we have budgeted some funds. Like Jason indicated, we've got a small amount of money each year that we've laid out for 5 years. And we could start looking at least in those three categories of where we think we'd get the most bang for the buck. I think it's safe to say that when we had the community conversations, one of the big things we heard from the residents was getting from the residential areas to the beaches. Going from west to east across the community was the biggest issue for them. So if we were to provide you with a recommendation, the recommendation would be that we take a look at the trails to the beach as kind of the first priority and try to disperse those improvements across all three districts in the city so that people in the north end, the middle, and the south end are all receiving an equitable benefit to safely get from their neighborhoods to our oceanfront.
Yep.
I wholeheartedly support that, and I was going to say that personally, and I think the way, you know, what I've heard from residents, I think people feel that there's been a lot of money that has been spent in the downtown area and along First Street. I run along First Street, and First Street, it's not as safe as I would like for it to be when I'm running, but still, I feel like our residents would say, you know, a lot has already been done in these areas. What about us? And I think we really need to put some priority on giving our residents some safe routes to the beach and to some of the other places that they want to go. That's my feeling.
I mean, I'd prefer to see all this go into like a five-year work program that we split it out, prioritize it, try to get it done in 5 years. If we're not able to, we can't. I think a lot of the decision is going to end up coming up to the funding. And there's substantial bicycle pedestrian grants available. We can push on the city of Jacksonville. We can push for other places. But I would like to see we go ahead and split it up in 5 years, really push hard to see where we get additional funding. And if we don't get it and some projects get pushed, then we let them get pushed. But having an end date for 5 years, I think, is makes sense for this because it's, what's the total, what do you, and then the other portion is if we end up having to take loans to kind of for infrastructure, it is usually not a, depending on the interest rate, and then you're looking at where construction costs are going. So are we paying today? If we would have done this project 5 years ago, we would have been doing it for probably 40% of the cost that we're doing it now. So we need to do a determination on the potential escalation of construction costs too. But I do like the five-year work program in order to be able to say, this is our goal, we're gonna try to get this done, and then if we have to push, we have to push based on funding needs.
That was my other question, under funding. I mean, we could spend, let's say, 300 next year, but what about the next couple of years? Is that going to increase?
I think if one of us goes to Washington with, you know, because there's a lot of money for bike ped stuff and really nowhere to hit, we might be able to fund this whole thing.
The issue that we might run into, and it seems, I can't remember who said it before, one of you hit on it, is you make an improvement to a corridor that's not ready to have the improvement made to it yet, and you have to go in and make changes. While we've taken a look at the first 5 years of CIP projects that we have planned, we have not looked beyond that window. So when you start talking the 5 to 10 year or the 10 to 15 year, we start talking about where are the locations that Public Works needs to replace drainage pipes, sewer pipes, potable water pipes, and does it make sense to earmark those particular projects for an urban trail or redesign of the road at the time Public Works is going to be ripping it up anyways. So I think as we, if you all like the concept of looking at those east-west connectors first, that can definitely be our first priority. We can start laying those out. We can package that together as a prioritization project to see if we can get some funding to support it. But I think the next thing we'd want to do is take our new assistant to the city manager and have her meet with Public Works and Beaches Energy and do a comparison of beyond 5 years for a lot of those primary corridors to see if there's work that's going to occur, not just in the first five, but 10 to 15, and then see where it makes sense to slot some of those projects as they come up. So from there, I think we'll have a much better idea of, are we looking to do maybe 50% of that entire concept within the first 5 years, 25 in the next 5 to 10 after that, and 25 in the final 10 to 15.
But
it'll give us a little bit better idea.
West-east corridors, it just a picture of families walking down our streets,
yep,
with their kids and strollers, in the road, dressed.
Yep.
Sorry. And it just makes sense to start in the north end because it touches Gonzales Park.
Well, and there have been a lot of dramatic improvements in the south end. I think the north end is ready to see some. And I, my first pick would be number 7 because there's a ton of speeding complaints on 9th Avenue that I think this would really help.
Well, and fourth touches Gonzales Park again.
And fourth, I would go 7-8 or 8-7. I'm flexible. But also, you know, on Penman Road, we shouldn't be paying anything for that. I mean, we should have a seat at the table to make sure this is implemented, but that really shouldn't be a budget issue for us. So I think we need to be prepared to make sure that this gets into the plan.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, Peters and Yaffe and the designers and really make sure they know exactly what we want. But my understanding that the total streets concept of what they're doing does include what we're trying to do.
Yes. It includes the 12-foot path right now in the draft that they've done.
But the only other concern I have about the west-east passages is that a lot are not curb and gutter, and that we have to look at, are we going to upgrade these roads to curb and gutter with this, or are we just going to leave them without that and just put in the pass and see what the time frame is like on those?
That'll probably depend on whether or not there's anything scheduled for that roadway section within the next 5, 10 plus years.
Or if we can even handle it better, right? Because the water can be.
Correct.
And I will for one say the 1F under the Beach Boulevard Bridge. I will say I don't necessarily see that as a priority. I mean, you do have a lot of people that walk that the loop of the 8, but there's not substantial traffic. I feel like it's pretty safe down there. And then you have sidewalk a lot of the rest of the way. So you could walk from that area to the beach on a sidewalk once you get there. So I don't know if that's necessarily a priority for me, even though I live there. But I do think, you know, most of those, like 1-8, 7, 8, 9, you know, 1B, I mean, any of those, I think that's definitely... That would show most use for our citizens.
So you've answered the second question already, which is where do we start? So I think the consensus is we look at the east-west connectors and pay attention to the ones on the north side. But just to go back to what you were saying, Mr. Nichols, are you saying that this is a $15 million project without grant funding, without any projects, $15 million? Do we budget that over the next 5 years, or do we go longer than that?
Well, it just depends on if the funding is available to do it. I think we try, we make it, do figure out the first half of the 5 years and the next 5 years, or whatever it is, but I think we it's really going to depend on funding. I mean, if we come up with a great funding source for it, then why wouldn't we try to get it done as soon as possible so that people can utilize it and get benefit for it over the next couple of years? I mean, I think we have a lot of changes, and I'd like to see a good deal of this done in the next four.
If you have a realistic timeline projection?
No, that's... pretty much while we're here tonight, because we're all over the place. I mean, you know, the citizens obviously think this is a fantastic project, and the feedback we're hearing from you guys is it is. And so do we do it now and do it over the short term, or do we do it, as the mayor says, you know, ongoing? What is going to be difficult is when you start a segment, you know, say on the north end, and then you've got your residents on the south end saying, when is it coming? We've got to have a plan that kind of shows all residents that over this time frame,
the project will be coming. One in the north, one in the south, one in the middle, one, and just kind of stack them like that, unless you're planning on doing them as under one contract. But, you know, these are large enough projects where you would let them separately anyway.
Okay.
I think with giving us the direction of at least where to start with those west-east connectors, that gives us an opportunity to go back and start looking at those particular corridors and maybe doing the first thing of packaging up all of the ones that do not involve any other type of infrastructure work in order to get done.
Yep.
And seeing if that can be put together as one package and then seek some grant funding to see if we can knock out a handful of them in one fell swoop.
Because, yeah, we just did Jacksonville Drive east of South Beach Parkway.
Yep.
And that all that infrastructure just got finished. I mean, and that's be a prime spot.
And I do think the other one that is pretty critical is this First Street, trying to make a decision if we're going to do that. If we're going to go down to one lane on, say, down.
Well, yeah.
That's the last policy question that we kind of have for some direction.
Yeah.
Should the First Street corridor be all one way in commercial and two everywhere else, or two way all the way through?
I think, first, on the project, on this, I think as long as it doesn't take us that. As long as the I-4 construction.
Ultimate I-4.
That took, I think, since I moved here 20 years ago and started. But the second, on the one-way or two-way, I think one-way maybe in the central business district and two-way in the residential. That's just my
opinion. If you look at crime prevention through environmental design, that's the most logical one. One-way in a commercial district and two-way in a residential neighborhood. And that's the safest, in my opinion.
I think maybe
I like number two.
Palm Beach Boulevard north to 6th Avenue or 7th Avenue north.
Probably. I don't think Heather's in the audience, but the central business district.
Oh, she is.
2nd south to 6th north would be the central business district, but you can take a look at what works best.
You go past Margaritaville, I guess you get to 8th is where
We could take a look at what makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I'll throw a little historical context. But I grew up at the corner of 25th and 1st, and I remember when that was two-way street, and I remember when it turned one-way going north from 37th. And you would have thought that the sky was falling, and it was cats and dogs living together in harmony. It's a horrible thing. But what we actually experienced over time was that actually not only improved that area, it would definitely make it difficult. But I mean, I could see making First Street one way wherever there's a secondary access, because we got through with it on the south end. There was still Second Street. So if you look at 16th Avenue South going north, make it unidirectional. It gives us more room for pedestrian traffic, gives us more room for bicycles, it gives us more room for joggers, it gives us more room for what we all know we want at the beach. In my opinion now, if we go just to 16th, it'd be kind of odd to have 16th to 25th two-directional. And people will complain in the beginning, but if we have so much more space for our citizens, I think that they will, there will be a bit of an uproar in the beginning, and people will be mad, and then they'll get used to it, just like people got mad when we got rid of all your ability to turn every single block here on 3rd Street. And we all, if you've been here for years and years, you used to be able to turn. And I go, I can't. I got to go all the way up, another block, and I got to turn around and come back. Well, that's just inconvenient, and now we're just used to it.
Right. And then if it's on 1st Street, really every block gets to 1st Street. So you really, if you're going home, you might have to drive one more block and come back half a block.
Yeah.
And on the south end, you're referring to First Street, not Ocean Drive, right?
Because First Street, correct.
Because the urban trail goes through First Street, not Ocean.
Correct. And I'm thinking back historically. Again, I remember when First Street right there at 25th was two-directional.
Right.
And so you could just go right through that intersection and keep going all the way down, and you went all the way down to Ponte Vedra. And I remember that because if I was going to go see my friends, I would literally drive out of my house, and I'm like, now what do? Where do I go? And I was grumpy for about 3 months until I said, okay. I think people will complain, but I think we might get more bang for our buck. And the other thing I think about when we talked about where do we go, east, west, north, south, which section do we do? I don't think we have a final answer here on that First Street. And there was also a good point that we should get all the work done out there before we really start doing something that we're going to have to tear up later. Let's get that area built out. Let's get the work done, and then if we get these east-west paths, we can make our residents happy, I think, and then continue to plan forward. But we have how much money set aside every year for the next 5 years?
So we put 300 in the general fund, and then 600 in 300 each in each of the CRA districts for the next 5 years. For this year, we carried over the 300 we had in last year's general fund, so we got a total of 600 in the general fund for fiscal 23.
Okay.
And then 300 each in the two CRA funds.
And the remainder of that will come from taking on debt?
No, from what I'm hearing.
TIF versus or?
CRA. Right?
CRA and?
CRA and general fund. And actually the funding sources we're using.
Infrastructure funding through, you know, long-term debt if necessary. I'd like to learn more about it, know what kind of interest rates you're looking at.
And where, yeah, where that long-term debt's coming from. Yeah. Yeah. Is it bonds or are we bonding or what?
So what we've been doing with our parks project is we've been setting aside money each year from the general fund into the general capital projects fund to execute the parks master plan. So our idea is to do the same thing for the urban trail system, except for the areas that are within the CRA districts and the CRA approves funding for those particular corridors. So the convention development fund also provides us an opportunity to develop new parks or new kind of multimodal areas, and so we were planning on using some of that funding as well, which is a $300,000 a year.
This is very tactical, but I just want to say it while we're talking about one-waying for a street in the downtown area, is that I would think one-waying it south would help the Beach Boulevard cruising north campus. Just throwing it out there. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. No.
So you can only go south. If you come up Beach Boulevard, you can't go north on First Street. You'd have to go on Second. Mm-hmm. Just a thought. I know that's very tactical. That's not where we're at, but.
That would be a good question for the chief, too.
I would think that would be
I like where your head's
look
at.
Safety talk.
Yeah, I think it needs to be one way, but the direction. Yeah, I have to kind of work through that one, yeah.
Just be harder to cruise.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
Got your direction?
I think so. I think we're going to come back and talk about First Street again.
We'll
it seems
talk.
Like. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, any other thoughts on this project?
I don't know, call Aaron Bean, tell him you need money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We really need to start.
There's money there. There's some legitimate ways that we could come up with $10 or $15 million in the next year or two or something like this.
Second.
We can all call Aaron.
Second.
Yeah.
Okay.
Would make it a lot easier, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Instead of coming out of your budget. We've got a lot of other stuff that we could do with that funding. I think something like this. There are mechanisms to be able to do that.
Given that we have
especially right now.
Given that we have 12 minutes left.
Presented you know, front of
no, no, that's okay. Hey, we have Jason hop over and talk about Gonzales Park real quick.
Well, I'll make this brief, Mike. At the last meeting, we talked about adding 4 pickleball courts at Gonzales without...
44.
And the direction we got was not to really lose any amenity, to see if we could fit them in. We met with the design consultant out there and came up with the plan that was in the packet. I did again bring a copy of the current plan and also have a copy of the last one that council had approved, if anybody wants to see that.
Can I get that last one? I didn't have time to go find it.
If anybody else would like one?
I'm going to just jump out there with
here,
my
I'll
gut reaction to this. I don't like adding the second volleyball court at all. And I went around and we've got like 9 volleyball nets on the beach. We've got 3 at South Beach and there's 2 in Jarbo. And I went by Jarbo and they weren't being used at all. My concern is that I really feel like we've taken away from the kids for the sand volleyball, and that concerns me. So I'm not comfortable with that at all.
We took away from kids for pickleball as well.
Right.
Well, let me talk to that.
I don't know about a kids playing that either.
I was similar, but I wasn't thinking it in the terms of the kids because of the 7,500 square foot area.
Yeah.
But I was thinking of it more towards like we had in the south end with the workout station. Wasn't that originally we had that little?
Yes. So when the design consultant looked at this, first let me address the kids area, Ms. Golding. That area that is on the current final plan is more than twice what is there now. We didn't reduce the old plan to get to that one. If you look at the old plan, what we had, as Mr. Jansen pointed out, was some exercise stations, I guess you would call that, on the west end. And so what we did is those exercise stations will still be in the park. They'll just be dispersed over a greater area as opposed to confined to one area.
I mean, I like it. I mean, as long as you're not negatively impacting the other stuff, I think it looks good.
Why did we add a second volleyball court?
Right, I didn't see.
I don't remember that coming up. I know pickleball was in the last one.
And I did get the, Jason sent the survey, the second one that we did when we had the community meeting, and there were a few people who wanted more than one volleyball court, but I noticed that some of the zip codes were not 32250 zip codes that wanted the volleyball courts. Mm-hmm. So, but then there were also people who said they didn't want volleyball courts at all. So, you know.
What was the net loss of shaded area from the first to the second, because they said we went from, looks like much more than 7,500 square feet to 7,500 square feet. So we had a shaded 2 to 5 year old, and then a shaded 5 to 12 year old. And was this fitness station to be shaded? Because let's be realistic, it's not gonna get any cooler here.
Yes.
I mean, shaded space at this park is gonna be a premium.
Yeah, that was one of the...
And is necessary.
Yes, in from the survey, that was one of the highest recommended, you know, items was the shade.
So, again,
do we know what the square footage
roughly what would our square time? We lost that, and then it was this to be shaded as well?
No.
Okay, so but these two are listed as being shaded, and then on the next one it says this is listed as a 7,500 square foot area. So I'm wondering what the volume lost was between these two and the 7,500 we have remaining on the second
floor. So what was lost was essentially that piece and so on.
Okay,
on the east end.
Okay, so that is 7,500.
Yes.
It just doesn't look like it on, maybe it's just the way it looks, but okay.
Both of these combined are 7,500?
No, just the middle.
This is 7,500 and we lost this amount, which is, I would say, 2,000 square feet, maybe?
Yeah.
Ish.
But still, the playground that is there now is about 3,400 square feet.
Correct. It's a significant improvement.
I would prefer myself just to see one volleyball court and then that fitness station to be in there. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Or something more shade.
More trees.
I know on the old one, I saw the bicycle rack, but on this new one, I don't see the bicycle rack. Is it just still there, or?
Yeah, I'm sure that we would keep it, along with things like water fountains and benches and that type of thing. So, is the consensus?
For the pickleball courts, we have somebody that's actually paying for those, so it's not coming out of the city budget. Do we have people paying for the volleyball courts?
No. No, but we are going to look at other sources of revenue in terms of maybe picket fencing around the playground area. And we did apply for a FIRDAP grant this year. It's a $250,000 matching grant. We'll know come, I'm going to say, June, July.
Who's that going
to? That's the FDP.
Environmental Pressure. Yeah.
So is the consensus then one volleyball court and add the first fitness stations in place of the second one?
Or the other thing that I saw in the survey was, you know, people wanted to make sure that we maintain some green space too. And I know when I go,
that's a huge part of it. That's all green space.
Right, but if this is being used by teams, I mean, the comments that were in the survey was, you know, want to make sure that there's green space for, you know, around the playground too for the kids. And I know, I don't know if you guys go by Gonzales, but that other section away from the fields, there's a green space area that gets used.
So what he added in the new one is a picnic area, which is, I guess, north of the pickleball courts.
Yeah, I like that. I like that green space just to the north of the picnic area. I just feel like if you had a fitness station, it's most likely to get used if you have it confined in, you know, in the nice area versus dispersed amongst the entire park.
Maybe take the two down to one and consolidate the equipment.
And could we even leave more green space there as well? Yeah. I've seen a lot of, because there's a big field here, which is great if nobody's out there playing baseball or whatever, but I don't see a lot of places for families sitting around with their kids.
Yeah, that field gets used constantly.
Well, and it looks like this got bigger too, right? This, if you compare it, it's definitely, there's more.
I don't know that it's gotten any bigger. If this is the existing restrooms.
Yes, but what's gotten bigger is, I guess, the
field.
Pitching mound
that line was here
there.
Goes.
Ooh. Yeah, why?
They took out trees too. It looks like.
Why the mound?
But it's multi-use, right?
Yeah.
Versus instead of having the two softball fields, I thought.
Right.
Yeah, multi-use.
But why would it change? Why would it change from this one to the new one? It moved over, like this whole tree line is gone.
Yeah, here's. So
but I don't know. I'm just trying to understand why we made this big empty space
right
bigger.
Yeah. That's the edge of the park, edge here, and then that's
that.
People
might get
and
out
then
there
now this
run soccer drills or something,
here.
But this isn't working.
Yeah,
because
I think that
lost this
the
whole
process
tree.
Soccer,
yeah.
Is that like two,
there's, so,
there
seems to be.
Line here, or is there like,
actually, that line.
Yeah,
it's not lined up as a field.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, but it's not going to have.
Yeah, what you've lost is exactly right, Mr. One. You've lost that row of trees.
Well, even
because
right now, when they go out there,
the same
cross teams and the soccer teams practice out there in the void space. So that was, I think that was the end.
But that was already there. I'm just wondering, why did it expand?
Well, I think as it stands right now, when they're out there practicing, it's the bleed spot where if they're out there playing softball, we're not doing batting practice when they're doing lacrosse. Because
I get what you're saying, but on the last diagram we saw to this diagram, the space changed, and that wasn't a discussion that we had last time. And same with the second. But I just want to know why did those things change? Because I think it's much closer than the original version that we saw, but I feel like this is very congested now. Mm-hmm. So taking out the second volleyball court will help, but I just don't understand. Like this green space got a lot bigger, and there's really, you can go out there and do practice, but you don't need a regulation size field to practice soccer or lacrosse or whatever you're going to do. So I'm just curious why this is more than half of the park where really there's only one organized activity on it, which is.
Yeah. May I, if you take the old one and you line, the building is the same in both, they don't change.
Right.
So if you line the buildings up together, what you find is in the old diagram, this row of trees got eliminated.
Right.
And that's the increase in the green space.
And the diamond got moved over to the south.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Why?
To add more athletic space because of the demand there.
But that doesn't make any sense. There's already a huge space here. So I don't.
That wasn't
something that we discussed last time. I'm just wondering what the second volleyball court and the expansion of the athletic space were changed from
this
one to the other,
bigger.
And I'm just curious
this
to why.
It appears condensed at the you know,
yeah,
the cost of that.
This is not bigger. This is no bigger than what it is on this one, because the building changed. Building is the same.
I know.
Yeah.
It's this part that's bigger.
We'll find out from the landscape architect. It does look like the ball field and green open space has moved further to the south. The boundaries moved further to the south. So we'll find out why they drew it that way.
And maybe the second volleyball court.
Maybe it's because they wanted to have, give more space for other activities to be going on, maybe beyond.
Potentially in the outfield at the north end of the park while they're still playing ball.
Already took out the second diamond to do that. So we reduced one ball diamond here so they're not facing each other. So we already have tons more open space than we have currently. And then we cram everything in over on this side. So I don't necessarily object to that direction, but I just want to know, then why did we add more space on the north side of the park? Open.
We'll ask. We will ask.
Also agree that, does everybody here agree that we're down to one volleyball court? I mean, I think that's reasonable.
It appears to be a consensus.
Yeah.
I just want to know what went into the thought of adding the second one. Like, was there a good reason that maybe we're just missing?
I think it was just aesthetics and in looking in the survey. You know, I mean, if you talk to the volleyball folks, they're just as passionate as pickleballers.
The space that we have, and usually don't see one volleyball court alone, so they can do kind of rotate through. And, I mean, I think at Jarbo they have two.
But this is also more of a community park.
I agree, but I think it's just so you can rotate. The same four people playing all the time. We do have a beach right there.
I'd like to call to order the December 12th.
We're starting, so I think we're ending.
All right. Hello, team.
Where does this go?
David
goes back for another
Margamaro.
Review.
Colleen White.
And then it will come
Chuck
back.
Mammon. Emily Stouffer. Maple Vander.
Get it on the next
one. Yeah, that's no worries.
We're done.
Planning commission.
We do not.